The Athletic.
Just to let you know, before we get started, the following episode has content some listeners may find upsetting.
The armed forces are entering and just begun to shoot at people who they saw on streets, near houses. They were the first victim who were completely innocent people who were just standing there by their homes.
In this episode of Away From Home, we bring you the devastating first-hand account of Elena Sukenko, who lost multiple members of her football-obsessed family in truly horrific circumstances.
Personally, I saw the scars on the bodies of my family. I saw the scars on the body of my brother, who was tortured.
On the pitch, Shakhtar head coach Igor Jovicevic vows his team will do everything they can to honour the troops back home, as well as those who have lost their lives.
We have Zbrojne Sily Ukraine, ZSU, who fight for us, for our freedom. We believe them, we support them. They give us the chance to play Ukrainian Champions League. So we fight on the pitch, like them fight on the front. And we are together in this story. The war and sport never been so close, never.
And it's the final two games in Group F for Shakhtar Donetsk, and they still have everything to fight for. First up, it's the cauldron that is Celtic Park, as third face fourth in a crucial match.
And then it all comes down to the last game for Shakhtar, as Igor Jovicevic's young Ukrainian side hosts Leipzig in Warsaw, their home away from home.
I want more. I want impossible to make it possible.
And we ask the question, will Shakhtar ever go home?
If somebody tells us now that we will never return back, we should stop playing football. Because it's our roots, you know, and it's our dream to return back. You know?
For The Athletic, I'm Adam Crafton.
And I'm Joey Durso.
And we're tracking Ukrainian football club Shakhtar Donetsk as they traverse Europe on a football mission, all whilst war continues back in their country.
When the war started, I was alone, but during this period I have already have a daughter, you know, and she doesn't know, he didn't see her home, you know.
Our new reality, it's like wartime, air signals with blackouts all the time. You expect that the Russians will use in nuclear weapon, drones shelling us. So it's our new reality.
This is Away From Home, Episode 5, The Impossible Game.
Ali, Ali, Shakhtar Ali, la 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 la.
That giddy voice you can hear is the Shakhtar head coach, Igor Jovicevic. He's alone on the pitch at Celtic Park, the home of Glasgow Celtic, and he's recording a message for the Shakhtar fans.
Shakhtar Donetsk!
It's match day 5 in Group F for Shakhtar Donetsk, and it's a crucial game for both teams. As you've probably heard throughout this series, myself and Joey Durso have been splitting the matches as there's so much to cover. I'll be in Warsaw for the final group game later in this episode, but first, Joey's travelled up to Glasgow.
Thanks, Adam. It's uncharacteristically warm for late October in Scotland, and both teams desperately need a win. Celtic Park is famous all around the world for its intimidating atmosphere. Before big matches, their supporters, like Liverpool fans at Anfield, stir the senses with Jerry and the Pacemakers' classic, You'll Never Walk Alone. On the afternoon of the game, I caught up with two Ukrainian Shakhtar fans, 17-year-old Nikita, who's been studying in London for a year, and his father Evgeny, who came to join him after the war started.
So, I'm happy about my team because it's the brave team. This Shakhtar Donetsk has a very big, very difficult story. He's don't have home stadium, yeah?
They moved from Donetsk to Kiev several years ago, but are still passionate supporters of their hometown club. Evgeny tells me about how his 5-year-old son, now a teenager mature beyond his years, was paraded on the pitch with the Shakhtar players back in 2009.
When there was the grand opening in Donbass Arena, in the Shakhtar Stadium, he got the star from the president, from the Renat Akhmetov, like younger's fan, yeah?
Yeah,
like a mascot.
Yeah, not like a mascot, like the 12th player on the pitch, so just a supporter from the fans.
Yeah, he was the 5 years old.
That was a glory year for Shakhtar, the year they won the Europa League and then opened the new Donbass Arena, which hosted the semi-final of Euro 2012, but hasn't seen any football since war broke out in eastern Ukraine 2 years later. In normal times, Shakhtar's away support would fly across Europe and rise to the challenge of being heard over the legendary Celtic roar. But these are not normal times, and many of those hardcore fans, the ultras, are at war. The away end in Glasgow is mostly empty, with just a couple of hundred Shakhtar fans, many of whom, I sense, are refugees, or Ukrainians living in Scotland, who might not usually come to a football match. It's a cagey first half of few chances, but as it goes on, Shakhtar come under more and more pressure. The home side feeding off a raucous crowd. Shakhtar weather the storm well, but Celtic take the lead 34 minutes in, courtesy of their Greek striker, Georgios Giakoumakis. At half time, Shakhtar look happy to get into the dressing room, only one goal behind. At the start of the second half, though, like in the Real Madrid game, Shakhtar start with more purpose. 13 minutes in, they score a wonder goal. Who else, of course, but their wonder kid, Mykhailo Mudryk, who runs with the ball, drifting past Celtic players before curling one into the net from 20 yards out. This competition's breakout star has done it again. And 20 minutes later, Mudryk is causing problems again, as he glides through the Celtic defence and is one-on-one with the goalkeeper. Instead of going himself, though, he squares it to his teammate, 21-year-old Danila Sikan, who somehow manages to get his feet caught up, stumbles in his run, and it goes wide with an open goal in front of him.
Sikan, how on earth has that not gone in? Blimey, I think that goes down as one of, if not the worst, miss of all time.
You might have seen this clip online. It's worth a look. It's one of those misses that the Shakhtar Academy graduate will never want to see again. It goes viral online, and in the dressing room, Sikan needs consoling. On social media afterwards, his fellow players line up to post supportive messages, and director of football Dario Cerna feels these moments are important life lessons for his young players.
They are young, it's not first time, I hope it's last time, but they are young. If you don't do mistake, you will grow up. That's the point. With Ruby, we don't have any problem. With Sikan, we support him, but he don't need support. He scored against Dinamo, he scored before 3 goals, he can score against Celtic. This is football, you know? It's important that he go out more stronger and more clever from after the situation. It happened. It's football.
Shakhtar don't manage to get a winner, and after a frantic finale, the game ends 1-1. In the other game in Group F, Leipzig have pulled off a shock by beating Real Madrid 3-2 in Germany. This set of results isn't ideal for Shakhtar. It means they're third in the group behind Leipzig, so will need to beat the German side in their final match. A draw won't do. Amazingly though, this result does mean that Celtic will finish bottom of the group. So Shakhtar are guaranteed a space in the Europa League. The European journey will continue in the new year, whatever happens in the next game. The Shakhtar fans who have managed to make it to Glasgow are so proud of their team and stay behind to applaud them after the game. At the full-time whistle, I meet a kid, Sviatoslav, who looked no older than 12, and his mother, who speaks little English, so Sviatoslav did the talking. He's small, blonde, smiley, and enthusiastic. He speaks English with an American accent he's picked up from watching TV.
Tell me about your father.
Okay, he's at war defending Ukraine. His name is Kostya.
And do you speak to him a lot?
Yes, by chat.
By what, message or video? Or you?
I do videos, photos, chat with him.
And how did you feel today in this stadium, seeing Shakhtar?
Man, that was great.
Yeah, why was it great?
Because so much noise. The one thing that needed in every stadium.
Yeah. So will you go home and tell your dad about what you saw today?
Yep.
What will you say?
Man, this game was so exciting. It ended with a tie. What I planned.
Against Celtic, the standout player once again was Mykhailo Mudryk. He's the player that everyone's been talking about. He's not only been Shakhtar's outstanding player in the Champions League so far, but he's been one of the most in form of the whole tournament. He scored home and away against Celtic, and he scored one and created two in the 4-1 victory against Leipzig back in the opening game. In fact, everyone I speak to while I've been making this podcast has had a question about where Mudryk will end up in the future.
If somebody wants to have Mudryk in their team, they must pay. They must respect us. Mudryk is one of the best players in Europe in this position, and he showed that today.
That was the club's director of football, Dario Cerna, whose voice by now will be very familiar to you. Mudryk had been pursued in the summer, with the English Premier League club Arsenal said to be interested, as well as Brentford and Everton, who both placed bids of around 25 to 30 million for the winger. Shakhtar managed to hold on to their young star. They hoped that some good showings in the Champions League might even increase his valuation, and how the plan worked.
After Mbappé, Vinicius, Mudryk is the best player in this position in Europe. And everyone who want to buy him, they must give a lot of money to Shakhtar. They must respect our club and our president, because we know how to sell players.
Aged 21 years old, Mudryk was born and raised in Krasnodar, a city close to Kharkiv that's been under Russian fire during the war. Mudryk is a striking young man, with dashing blonde hair and prominent tattoos. One, on his neck, reads "Only Jesus." Another, on his chest, written in green and in the English language, says, "Dear God, if today I lose my hope, please remind me that your plans are better than my dreams." As a player, he's direct, he's fast, and he has great close control and a powerful shot. He says he's inspired by Cristiano Ronaldo. For Mudryk, it's not always been so straightforward. The Shakhtar captain, Taras Stepanenko, explained to me how, under two previous head coaches, a teenage Mudryk was invited to train with the first team, but on both occasions, he was sent back to the younger age groups because he didn't show the correct application.
I think he changed his mentality, his approach to the training, to the his attitude change, and now we see the player like him, the person like him, and so it's totally different than he was like 3-4 years ago. So it's very good. Now he's mentally, physically, technically very strong.
Shakhtar's director of football, Cerna, agrees that Mudryk's commitment is no longer in question.
He's more than professional. Sometimes, he's staying after training, shooting, kicking like 2 hours. Wow. But this is Mudryk. We must respect that.
For Mudryk, it must be such a strange time, with terror striking his country, while, on a personal level, he has the world at those twinkling feet. At Shakhtar, his contract runs until 2026, and it means that they can demand a vast sum of money. But the expectation remains that Mudryk will be sold by the summer at the latest. In early November, one Shakhtar executive, Carlo Nicolini, said that Arsenal and Manchester City are among the clubs interested in the player.
If somebody must want to buy Mudryk, they must pay huge, huge, huge money. Otherwise, he will present with no suffering. They must, all the clubs, they must respect president, they must respect Shakhtar, and at the end, they must respect Mykhailo Mudryk, who is one of the best players. I said that like 4 months ago. Girlish, Anthony, they are players more than 100 million. And for me, Mudryk doesn't have less quality than them.
If he does move, Mudryk will almost certainly become the most expensive Ukrainian player in the history of football. Andrei Shevchenko went to Chelsea for around 31 million in 2006, while Oleksandr Zinchenko joined Arsenal for a similar amount this past summer. At a time where the future of Ukraine has been called into question, the performance of young Ukrainian footballers like Mudryk has inspired those around Shakhtar. When they beat Leipzig 4-1 on the opening match day, 8 members of the starting lineup had come through their youth system, and 6 players were aged 23 or below. And there's more promise round the corner for Shakhtar. You might remember how, in episode 1, I explained that the club's under-19 side travelled to these Champions League games in the same coaches and aeroplanes as the first team. That's because they play in the UEFA Youth League, also alongside Real Madrid, Celtic, and RB Leipzig's youth teams. In Glasgow, 5 games into the group stage, Shakhtar's under-19s confirmed a miracle of their own, as they won their 3rd game out of 5 and sealed qualification into the knockout stages. I sat down with the club's under-19 coach, Oscar Ratolutra.
My name is Oscar, I'm 37 years old. I already in Shakhtar whole my life, let's say. Before I was as a player, playing in our academy, and then I had some problem with my health, and I decided to change my activity, and I started to work as a youth coach. I started to work with the youngest team. It was under-9, and also I was working as a skill coach in our academy. And then, step by step, I reached under-19. Now I'm here and try to do my best for improving our players. And it's really good, and I'm very like my work.
Oscar's players are aged between 16 and 19. In ordinary circumstances, their lives would be laced with sporting jeopardy. This is the moment where so many young players either make it in a first team or look elsewhere for experience, or, in some cases, even fall out of football altogether. Yet for this crop of youngsters, the challenge has been even greater. I ask Oscar if, like the first team, he has used the war as motivation.
We had this conversation with our players. We usually explain to them that our army do their best in war part of Ukraine. Yes, but we must do our best in this position. If all people will do their best on their position, it helps a lot for our country. You know, so everyone must do their best in his position.
Yeah, because many of them are at an age where I imagine their friends.
Yes, or maybe parents.
Or friends, or their parents, or their brothers. Of fighting.
Yes, sure. We have a lot of players. Their father, for example, in war, protect our country. A lot of situations, you know, a different situation in our team.
The performances of Shakhtar's stranded sons, both for the first team and the under-19 team, has provided cause for introspection at the club. As explained in previous episodes, Shakhtar have often looked abroad when recruiting players for their first team, and they have this long history of signing Brazilian footballers. But Dario Cerna feels this extraordinary season might be the catalyst for a change in the club strategy.
If you ask me which kind of players, if I have possibility to bring back somebody of Brazilian, I have doubts. With all respect to Brazilian, they're my friend always, they do a lot of amazing things for Shakhtar. But if we want to bring one player, new one, he must be better than our one. Minimum 50%. And it's difficult to find a player who is better than Ukrainian now in this moment.
Has that been a reminder, even for you, that someone living a long time in Ukraine, what these players have done this season about the talent that was there for you?
I will be honest. I didn't expect this kind of result. I didn't expect this kind of quality of the game. I didn't expect that. I know that we have amazing talents, but I thought that we need more time. And Igor Jovic with his staff, they are doing amazing job. You know, now it's easy to speak, but Igor have courage and he took Shakhtar.
Didn't have to.
4 months ago without 14 players. It was not easy, but he showed that he have balls. He believe in his work and in this team. And we do very nice success, but we are not finished.
The under-19 coach Oscar has worked at so many levels of the club that he's coached several of the first team players.
I'm very proud, you know. I'm very proud. When I saw a Champions League game, when the game of Champions League started, they are staying in front of fans, you know.
With the music.
Yes, with the music, my heart just makes some pum, pum, pum. I cannot control, yes, and it's very, very good emotion. I cannot pass this emotion to you, you know.
As Shakhtar look to future talent within their own borders, it only makes the longing for home even greater.
Do you miss it?
Yes, sure. We had... In Donetsk we had good conditions, you know. We had a very good training center, a very good stadium. We had whole facilities for develop young players, you know, in a top level. It's a pity that we lost all these conditions and
I can tell you're a little bit emotional talking about Donetsk. What does it feel like when all of a sudden your home is not your home anymore?
Yes, sure. I don't know. Quite difficult to explain, you know. When the war started, I was alone. But during this period, I have already have daughter, you know. And she doesn't know, he didn't see her home, you know. So.
How old is she?
5 years old.
What's her name?
Emily. Yes.
Do you hope one day Donetsk will be her home?
Yes, sure. We pray for this. We are waiting when this moment appear, you know. And whole people in Ukraine are waiting.
I'll come back to that key question of whether Shakhtar will ever go home later on. But talking again about Donetsk takes me back to my first conversation at the Polish airport of Rzeszów during the first match day of this group stage. I recall speaking to a member of Shakhtar's staff who told me about friends of his in Donetsk. He explained how, back home, the Russian forces were attempting to round up Ukrainians and force them to fight against their own country. I asked Shakhtar director Vadim Gunko about this topic.
I think it was your colleague yesterday was saying they now... they're trying to make the Ukrainian people there fight for Russia.
Yes, and you know, in February, in the beginning of the March, I said to my wife, the worst nightmare which I can imagine is to be in the territory occupied by Russians, and then these Russians make yourself to enroll in the army to fight against our Ukrainian people, our Ukrainian soldiers. It's absolutely, you know, it's the worst scene which I can even imagine in my life. So
this would be a forced betrayal.
Yes. They're like hostages, acts as hostages, you know, because you can say no, I think so, for some of them, because it's, you know, maybe they can do something with your family, so. It's absolutely, you know, a terrible situation.
You might also remember the voice of Oleg, a Shakhtar superfan who made it to the first match of the group stage in Leipzig. Oleg is from Donetsk, but he was already living outside of Ukraine when the full-scale invasion started in February this year. I asked him what he hears from his friends who are still there in Donetsk.
So at the moment, the stories that we hear from Donetsk is obviously very, very bad.
I've been there since the first day. Yeah, so I saw all the things happening, and actually it was really hurting me a lot when I heard the things that are happening in Donetsk right now. That's really terrible.
Oleg's parents remain in Donetsk because they're not prepared to leave his elderly grandparents alone. I asked him about the stories that I'd heard of Russian troops forcing Ukrainians to fight against their own country.
All of my friends, I've been studying there in school, so I'm like 1998 Rosé, and all my guys from school, they are 6 or 5 months already, or 3-4 months staying at their apartments, and even not going to the street because they're really scared. They're putting their wives and their girlfriends to take some food to home. And one of my friends, he's working as a taxi driver, and he received his documents so he can move around the city. And still, he's getting a lot of guys trying to pull him to the army. So mostly, like 99% of the 100, they are staying in the house and just being afraid to get out there.
And that's because the Russians are trying to make
Ukrainian people
fight.
They are lacking of army right now, I guess. So they're trying to get everybody who's capable of fighting. He's trying to get everyone to the army. This is really terrible because my friends, they're just like me. So it's the same age. And they don't want to make war. They just want to leave.
During this series, we've brought you snapshots from the war and the traumatic impacts of the Russian invasion. Hearing Oleg's accounts of his friends in Donetsk reveals some of the sinister conduct by the Russian forces in occupied areas such as Donetsk. And the more that we speak to people, the more that it seems there are similar stories to be found all over the country. The next interview you will hear will not be an easy listen. It's not a story specific to Shakhtar, but it is the story of a Ukrainian footballer, Oleksandr Sukhenko, and his family. It's a story that offers a window into the brightest and darkest aspects of human nature. I'd intended to meet Oleksandr's sister, Olena Sukhenko, on my aborted trip to Kiev. But instead, it's mid-afternoon when she joins me and our Ukrainian translator Dima on a Zoom meeting. Olena has blonde hair, and as autumn becomes winter in Eastern Europe, she wears a warm jumper. She's in the village of Matuzhna, located around 40 kilometres west of Kiev. It's one of those place names, along with nearby Bucha and Irpin, that have become bywords for terror and trauma during this war. Elena speaks to me in the family home of her parents, Olga and Igor.
I'm Elena Sukhenko, the daughter of Olga Petrivna and Igor Vasilievich Sukhenko, and sister of Oleksandr Sukhenko. Right now, I am in Motuzhne, in the house of my parents, my family.
The Sukhenko family were popular. Mum Olga was a community leader of this small village with a population of around 1,000. As for Elena's brother, Oleksandr, he was a professional footballer in the third division of the Ukrainian game.
As a little boy, it was his favorite game. He often went to the local stadium, the village stadium, all of his life, I could say.
To his family, Oleksandr was known as Alex, and his favourite player was the former Arsenal and France striker, Thierry Henry. As a child, Alex wore his Arsenal kit all the time.
All of our family likes football, not just at the stadium, but all of the big games on TV in Europa League, Champions League, all of this was always in our family.
Olena sends me a photograph of the office room in her parents' home, where there is over 30 trophies that both her brother and father won, competing in local football competitions. When the war broke out in February, the family came together at their home. They presumed that Matuzhna, a small village, would be a safe haven. So Alex and his partner Daria, as well as Olena and her husband and young daughter, all reunited at the home of their parents. But not long after, the sanctuary of family and home was breached.
On the 27th of February, we saw tanks enter our village. Real tanks, like the ones you see in films. We saw them in our streets.
As a village leader, Mum Olga had taken responsibility in the days between February the 24th, when the invasion started, and February the 27th. Elena explained that her mum wanted to make sure that her neighbours were looked after. She even encouraged a local bread factory to bake a surplus.
She supported the life of the village so that everyone had enough of whatever they needed. She bought milk nearby in the village for the little kids and mothers and delivered them to their houses.
Elena's brother Alex and their dad Igor were courageous in a different way. They were part of the territorial defence, and they kept guard of the village at night. But one evening, things changed forever in this sleepy village.
On the 27th of February, everything changed. The tanks entered, the Russian soldiers entered, and the village froze. Everyone was very frightened. Everyone was scared.
Olena's memories are clear. She remembers seeing and hearing the first bullets fired at civilian vehicles. Olena and her young daughter left the village on the orders of her parents and her brother. Alex told her that he knew that he was taking a risk by staying behind, but he felt that he had a responsibility to help others remain safe. So too did her parents, who helped people to drive out and escape from the village, while her brother Alex distributed medicine to elderly and vulnerable people. This lasted for several weeks, but on March the 18th, there was a clash between the Ukrainian forces and Russian occupiers close to the village.
The occupiers just became angrier with the fact that the locals aren't against them and the armed forces are entering, and just began to shoot at people who they saw on streets near houses. They were the first victim who were completely innocent people who were just standing there by their homes. I maintained contact all the time with my mother, brother, father. There were constant shootings, explosions around the village.
On March the 23rd, the Russians entered the Sokhenko family home. They searched the phones of Elena's brother and her parents. Elena encouraged her brother to get out of the village, but again, the family were determined to stay, determined to help those around them.
Some time passed, neighbors called me and said that the Russian occupiers came again and took away my parents. I called my brother, he confirmed this. I asked him that he hide somewhere, but he said that he will wait for his parents, because the occupiers told him that, apparently, they will return the parents to him, but the main condition is that he doesn't leave the property and waits. Later, contact with my brother ended.
Her neighbors confirmed to Elena that her brother had now been taken as well. She never spoke to her brother again.
On the 2nd of April, my parents and brother were discovered in a mass grave by the forest, by the village. My husband was there and saw and identified the bodies. The fact that they were tortured is 100% true. Is it the most difficult for me to talk about and to imagine? I think about this all the time and don't understand how non-human you must be to do this on Earth.
For Elena, recounting such details is a painful process, but she makes clear that she wants to continue. She wants the world to know what she had to see, the evidence of hands bound together, motionless, in a shallow pit.
Personally, I saw the scars on the bodies of my family. I saw the scars on the body of my brother, who was tortured. I read their views and expertise. There are no kind of fakes. People are being terrorized. Civilians are being terrorized. This must be condemned. The guilty must be punished. This exists, and we do not need to be silent about it. We know about this and we are shouting to the whole world. Whether in Little Matuzhne or a bigger Pin or in Izum, it is everywhere. For these creatures, there is no place here.
For Elena, the resentment lingers. Her voice is not tearful during this interview, but it's cold and it's clear. She shows me a family photograph in which only she and her daughter remain. The rest have essentially been crossed out, now mere statistics of Russian barbarity.
You know, for some reason, I thought that a half year would pass and the hate would pass. But it has not passed. It just settled with me. Unfortunately, in Motuzhne, we felt how scary these people are, how sick these people are who came here, where no one called them and where no one wanted them.
When stories like this exist, hope can be hard to come by for Ukrainian people. Yet for several of Shakhtar's players, solace is found in their faith. Large parts of the Ukrainian population follow Orthodox Christianity. When the Shakhtar captain Taras Stepanenko gives a team talk to his players before a match, he asks them to bow their heads before his final rallying call. He himself says a prayer before every game, and Stepanenko, along with several other Shakhtar players, carry their icons with them to every game.
My face is always with me, I try to be honest person, and it's very important. So mentally and inside of my head, like inside of my heart, it's like always good thoughts about the situation, and my face always helped me to my family. Now I don't have much possibility to go to the church. Because when I live in Donetsk, Kyiv, I did it one time per week. I went to the church, but now I don't have possibility. But you know, when you have faith, it's not about to go to the church, and about your attitude in the life, about your connection with the people. It's about your attitude in all aspects of life, what you do and what you try to achieve.
Back at Shakhtar, it's match day 6 in the Champions League, and it's the final game of the group stage. As a reminder, Real Madrid are top of Group F, and they are assured of qualification ahead of the final round of fixtures. Red Bull Leipzig are second with 8 points, while Shakhtar sit third with 6 points, and Celtic, they're bottom with only 2 points. As such, the equation for Shakhtar is very simple. They must beat Red Bull Leipzig in Warsaw to qualify for the final 16 of the Champions League. Should they fail, they drop into the Europa League. If you remember from episode 1, Leipzig sacked their head coach, Domenico Tedesco, after losing their first match of the group stage against Shakhtar. But under Marco Rosa, the Germans have found form, going 9 matches unbeaten before this crunch fixture against Shakhtar. It won't be easy. But in the lobby of the team's hotel, Dario Cerna is in reflexive mood.
We don't have home already 8 years. We lost in the last 6 months, 14 players, coaching staff, and everybody thought that we are finished. Shakhtar is finished. We don't have players. No one even didn't expect that we will took 1 or 2 points in Champions League group. I'm so proud.
On the next sofa is the chief executive, Sergei Palkin. I wanted to speak to him to understand the financial importance of this match to Shakhtar, particularly at a time where the club have no matchday income from the Ukrainian Premier League games, with no fans allowed into the stadium due to the war.
Can I ask, first of all, what could this be worth financially? To qualify for the Champions League.
No. It will cost for us 9.5 million euro plus 2.8 million euro for victory. More than 12 million euro cost of this game.
Wow.
For us, it's huge money. It's a very expensive one game.
Later on, at his pre-match press conference, Shakhtar's head coach, Igor Jovicevic, speaks of his pride in this young team's development.
It's amazing for me as a coach to see how they grow up each day, and this challenge make it possible to play against the best from you, with more experience than you, with more budget with you. So this is our first experience. in Champions League. So we play with courage, we play with talent, but we multiply this talent with courage and energy, you know, with spirit, collective spirit. You know? We play for the Ukrainian people. We know what for who we play, so this is our strength, you know. Tomorrow, 60 games in this Aventure Champions League, and this is amazing. We have a Europa League. This is amazing. 3 months ago, nobody believed that we can do it. Nobody believed in that. So we have inside, spirit inside to progress. So I want more. I want impossible to make it possible.
Before the game kicks off, I head outside the ground and speak to some of those supporting Shakhtar.
So we're here. We're here in Warsaw before the final game. Can you just introduce yourself and also your little boy who's here?
I'm a Ukrainian. I have two boys, two sons. One of them will come with the Shakhtar team on the football.
Like a mascot?
Yes, like an escort. Yes. Yet, children. And the second one will be with me to have
to watch the game,
to have a fun. To be together with our team and with our country, yeah. And you know, because there's not so good situation now in Ukraine.
And what's his name?
Sasha. Alexander.
Can you say his name?
Скажи своє ім'я. Як тебе зовут?
Саша.
Hello, Sasha.
Скажи hello, Sasha.
Hello, Sasha.
I then speak to a Polish guy, Victor, and his children, who have attended every match in Warsaw in support of Shakhtar.
And who is your team normally?
Usually we support Legia Warsaw.
Legia Warsaw.
Yeah.
But it's a chance to see Champions League.
Yeah, sure. That's first. And second, to show the support to all the Ukrainian friends that are there. They cannot see their match on their pitch. They should see it on their pitch. But unfortunately, due to this, you know, bloody Putin and their forces, they are just pushed to play here. So I hope the Shakhtar team will feel here at home. We were at all their two matches before. Now there is third match. I hope they will stay here much longer in the Champions League. But of course, would love to have Shakhtar playing at home. And I really hope they will play next season, next Champions League in Donetsk, in a normal situation. This is what we support and this is what we really believe in and pray for.
Inside the stadium, the atmosphere is not quite what Shakhtar would hope for on what is, on paper at least, a home fixture. In ordinary circumstances, this should be a trip to eastern Ukraine for Leipzig, and it should feel like a bear pit for a visiting side when so much is at stake in the Champions League. But Warsaw, remember, is actually much closer to Leipzig than it is to Donetsk. So plenty of Germans have made the trip over, and they are the ones who are making most of the noise inside the stadium. Any lingering optimism for Shakhtar doesn't last too long. There's a slip by Georgi Sudakov, which creates a chance inside 10 minutes for Leipzig. And Christopher Nkunku, one of Leipzig's star players, opens the scoring.
Save, Nkunku rattles it in. Leipzig are 1-0 up in the first 10 minutes.
For Shakhtar, the task is now mammoth. They must come from behind. In previous matches, Shakhtar have always been resilient, always summon courage when games appear to be slipping away from them. They get to half-time, still only a goal down. And I wonder whether one last miracle may yet be in their sights. But within 5 minutes of the second half, Leipzig score again, and Andre Silva scores for the German side.
Andrea Silva, after забитого м'яча, друзі, 0-2, стає рахунок, ну це...
This, at last, appears to be one bridge too far. Shakhtar had injuries in the forward positions before the game, with Marian Schwed and Alexander Zubkov both out of this one. During the weekend before this decisive fixture, Shakhtar's Ukrainian Premier League match against Alexandria had been halted for over an hour due to an air raid alarm in Lviv. Shakhtar's players waited in an underground dressing room as afternoon turned to evening before then completing the game. During that one, Zubkov's ankle suffered damage and that's what ruled him out of this final Champions League match. There just isn't enough in reserve. And as Shakhtar chase away back into the match, spaces emerge, and Leipzig score a third, and then a fourth. They've been thrashed 4-0.
It's Leipzig who go through as runners-up to Real Madrid in the group. They've won by 4-0.
Yet at the final whistle, there's no visible heartbreak, only pride. Head coach Jovicevic gathers his team together on the field, in a huddle. At the press conference, I asked Jovicevic what he told his men.
Head up. Head up. We concluded cyclus of 6 games. We lost 6th game, but head up. We did our best in this moment. This team, it's very good. It's not a shame. Lose with Leipzig. Don't permit that they are sad. Okay, we can be sad because this is sport. You lost the game. But head up. I'm so proud.
After the game, in the depths of the stadium, I caught up with the Ukrainian journalist Irina Kozyupa, who has featured throughout this series, and this is going to be our final catch-up. I started by asking her what this Champions League group stage has meant to her personally.
Our normal life, our new reality, it's like wartime, it's living with all these air signals, with blackouts, with all the time you expect that the Russians will using nuclear weapon, drones will shell in us. So now all these like games, visiting other countries, it's not normal. It's no more normal life as it was like last year. And I will miss about that because it helps me to go through all this. I don't even imagine my life this year without all this football. Really, the football helped me to escape the war. But even like during all these trips and games, when sometimes you hear a very loud sound, like, what happened? Oh, okay, it's not Ukraine, it's abroad, so you were safe here. But still, you look a little bit nervous.
Before the game, there was just a sudden noise in the stadium, and yeah. I could see you jump because you start to think it's something else.
Yeah, because you like expect, you live in such conditions that you expect that something can happen anytime, like during night, during the day, so you're like ready to run, to escape, to hide.
You mentioned in one of the previous episodes that your brother is fighting for your country. He's still fighting now?
Yes. I wrote him messages, like text some message, like, how are you? To be honest, I even don't know exactly at what place he is now, but probably somewhere in eastern Ukraine, not far away from front line. But like, I saw that he's online, so like, yes, everything okay.
Are you proud of him?
Oh, very much, yeah. You know, sometimes it's difficult to say that words to him directly, that I'm proud of you, you're like a hero of nowadays time, all our family, and like very much proud and waiting to see him at home, gathering all together, healthy and alive, and everybody like hope that every family will do the same. Will every soldier, every arm guy, every guys who are now in armed forces will come back home too soon, and all this horrible will be in the past. But for Christmas, I hope we will be able to gather all family, like with my brother, with his family, and I hope we will have a light at that day, and it will be not shelling, no air signals. It will be, you know, the perfect day, just calm, usual day.
With the Champions League campaign over, Shakhtar now return to Ukraine to continue in their domestic championship. The Ukrainian Premier League will then halt for much of the World Cup, and then there'll be a winter break as well. During that time, Shakhtar are in talks to play some charity-friendly matches in the United States against clubs such as DC United, who are managed by Wayne Rooney, and Inter Miami, who were part owned by David Beckham. As we mentioned earlier, Shakhtar's third place finish in the group means that they have the Europa League to look forward to next year. It means they join the likes of Barcelona, Manchester United and Arsenal in Europe's second biggest competition, so it's not so bad. This is a financial boost for the club as well, and it means that the Ukrainian football fans still have a team to support and represent them on the big stage. In the Europa League, Shakhtar will face the French club, Rennes, in a knockout tie in February. Their European dreams aren't quite over yet, and as you probably noticed during this series, this young Shakhtar side, they won't go anywhere without a fight. For all Shakhtar's resilience this season, major uncertainty does lie ahead. They'll likely lose their star player, Mikhailo Mudryk, in the coming months. The Court of Arbitration for Sport will soon hear Shakhtar's 50 million euro legal case against FIFA that we covered in episode 3. The chief executive, Sergei Polkin, also tells me that some clubs are even preparing to take Shakhtar themselves to court. Cash flow issues caused by the war have restricted their ability to pay money owed for previous signings. As the war intensifies and Putin's belligerence continues, the long-term future of Shakhtar appears dependent, as ever, on the continued investment of owner Renat Akhmetov. Back home in Ukraine, problems remain. In the second week of November, President Zelensky warned his country that 4.5 million people were now without electricity. He said Ukrainians must endure the difficulties. He said, "We must get through this winter and be even stronger in the spring than we are now." For Shakhtar, it's now 8 years since they were able to play in their stadium, in their home, in their city, in Donetsk. Making this series has made me begin to wonder. Shakhtar have emerged as an emblem of Ukraine on the world stage, regardless of where they've played their matches. So might they ever consider a more permanent life in a different part of the country, outside of Donetsk? While President Zelensky may have stated his aim to return all the occupied regions to Ukrainian control, Tamir Puri, the author of Russia's Road to War with Ukraine, explains that this is a really complicated situation to resolve.
Ukrainians could kick the Russians out of every inch of Ukraine, but I've never thought they would, which has made me very unpopular with lots of my colleagues as well, because I'm from the West and my colleagues are in the sort of national security world, and it's like support Ukraine for total victory or bust. And I think, well, sure, we just don't always get what we want, and I'm just not sure Shakhtar in particular will ever go home. I might be wrong. And then I suppose if I am wrong, the question is, when would they go home? Because you'd have to push the Russians out of Donetsk. And the Donetsk city, which is quite close to the Shakhtar stadium, is actually relatively close to Russia. It's not even like an outlying bit, as you've seen on the map. Like, could that be in 2023? Do people have the stomach to keep fighting through another winter, if we're still talking about this in a year from now? The people around the club who are from there, I mean, they've been kicked out of their homes. I mean, that's one of the most awful, short of being killed or injured, that's one of the most hurtful things, to become a displaced person or a refugee. You can't go back home. So that's just another side to it, which is a very sad side to it.
Yet to many at the club, it's blasphemous to suggest that Shakhtar could ever move elsewhere.
If somebody tells us now that we will never return back, we should stop playing football. Because it's our roots, you know, and it's our dream to return back. You know? And because of this dream, we're alive and we continue this club. We continue to develop it where we can, you know, we continue to reach results, to be ready to return back. Therefore, for us, it's point number one, and dream number one, that we need to return back.
It's an ambition that burns through the club. They have no intention of being away from home forever. Yuri Sviridov is the club's communications officer. He made this podcast series possible by opening Shakhtar's doors to us, and he's been my link to the club throughout. It feels fitting to to give him this final word.
I can't say for all, hold the club. I can say for myself. Shakhtar Donetsk should play in Donetsk. Once we win this war, I believe we have to come back. And for me, the first day of you can stop the war, but you need to start the normal life. And first day of normal life will be when we play first match in Donbas Arena against Dynamo Kyiv. This is real end of the war. Because you can stop, but to start living there, it's different. And if you start, if we play the first match in Donbas Arena with the people around, so this means that it's the real end of the war. We have to be there, and it's a symbol of normal life. I think it's a dream for many people, and it's touching, it's emotional. It should happen one day. Yeah. I hope we will be there. I hope you will be there as well.
Next time on Away From Home, myself, Joey, and our producer Abby take you behind the scenes in the making of this documentary series as we answer your questions and reveal some of our highlights of Away From Home.
Away From Home is an Athletic Media Company production. It was presented by Adam Crafton and Joey Durso. It was written and produced by Adam Crafton, Joey Durso and Jesse Howard, with additional production by Mike Stavrou. Sound mixing is by Jesse Howard. Translation by Dima Rebrov. Voiceover by Maria Mikhailov. Dr. Samir Puri is the author of Russia's Road to War with Ukraine, available now. The executive editor is Adrian Moorhead, and the managing editors are Ben Green and Alex Kajowski.